I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm Dan Harris, joined by Mike Tagliere. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at Mike Tagliere NFL. Tags, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic, Dan. You know, it's one of those weeks where, you know, like, all I want is things to happen as they're supposed to. We're not going to be right 100% of the time. That's not going to happen. Otherwise, we'd be rich, you know, recording in some island or whatever. But, I mean, this week, at least, things seem to have gone more like they were supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, I'd go with that. And just to be clear, because I mean, I like full transparency when we podcast, I am rich and I am podcasting from my own island. So I want to make sure the listeners know that going in. But yeah, I agree. This was sort of a week where things just kind of felt right. You know, everything kind of, you know, you knew that Adam Thielen was going to have a big game in that sense. I kind of am a little disappointed in the DeAndre Hopkins game, which we'll talk about shortly. But, you know, when Will Fuller is going for 200 yards, there's really not much you can do. So why don't we get right into it? Who's your big winner from the day?
I mean, I'd be wrong if I said anybody outside of Will Fuller, right? I mean, he's a guy that was seeing targets. We talked about him a lot on our DFS podcast. And I know, and I just want to say that if you're a fantasy football player and you're listening to this podcast right now and you don't play DFS, that's fine. But I really do highly suggest listening to the DFS podcast, because sometimes we'll dig into players that we don't do on the Sit Start podcast because, like, they're a great DFS player, whatever. It just helps you learn more about the game. And we had Joel Hoka on this past week, and he started making a case for Will Fuller. And when he started talking about him, I'm like, I can understand the appeal. And I was like, here's my concerns, is that coming off the ACL, he hasn't looked the same. The efficiency just hadn't been there. And I was like, you know, maybe it's the ACL. Maybe he's just not 100% yet. I don't know what it is, but the opportunity. And as the show went on, I actually came back to it later in the show, and I was like, you know, Joe, I'm with you on Will Fuller. I'm going to go in this week. So I played a lot of him in DFS, so obviously it was a good week in that aspect. But he's definitely the biggest winner, because we did see him dominate the Falcons defense. It was the Falcons. They're not going to play them every single week. But he did exactly what he was supposed to, and he kind of had the game that I think everybody anticipated for DeAndre Hopkins. So this is a massive step in the right direction for Will Fuller.
Well, let me ask something. Okay, because Kenny Stills is out here, so it's a little even added boon to all the receivers. In Houston, it's a great matchup. So with the understanding that there was no Kenny Stills and that it was a great matchup, how much does this impact your rest of season ranking on Will Fuller? You had him 52nd in half PPR coming in.
Yeah, basically, I wanted to see him like do something on the field because the efficiency wasn't there. We saw Kenny Stills, QT was coming back healthy. I moved him up to wide receiver 37. I would debate putting him inside the top 35 for the rest of the season. It's very close to that, but in that aspect, I still do view him as a sell high in fantasy football because he's still the same Will Fuller that he was over the first few years of his career. He's going to be somewhat boom or bust. They're not going to play the Falcons every week. And DeAndre Hopkins, is going to go bananas at some point. And, you know, it's kind of like the whole adage, like, you're going to buy low on DeAndre Hopkins, and people are listening to the show shaking their heads and doing that elitist thing where you can't buy low on DeAndre Hopkins, bro. No, you can buy low on DeAndre Hopkins. The idea is buying lower than what he was bought for. And like when people spent a number 5 or number 4 or number 6 overall pick on DeAndre Hopkins, if you can get him for a second rounder, like a value of a second or third round pick right now, that is what I call buying low. It's not buying for free, no, but it's buying low. So I like buying DeAndre Hopkins right now. I like selling Will Fuller because ideally you get rid of that. You get rid of some of the boom bust players. That's fine for wide receiver 3 slots. But if you could sell high on Will Fuller after that big game, just put the feelers out there. You don't have to sell him, but putting the feelers out there to see what you can get in return. Maybe you can get a Josh Gordon in return.
You know, there are two responses that I have. The first one is, if you are speaking in a surfer voice and saying bro at the end of your I can't buy what do you mean, man? I can't buy low, dude. Don't do that ever. Just don't. I mean, Tags, you're allowed to do that on the podcast because you're imitating people, but if you are the people that Tags is imitating, just don't do that. Re-examine your life and come up with a better way to just exist. With regard to Fuller, I completely agree. I mean, you know, nobody's going to buy him off this game as, oh, wow, he's going to be a wide receiver. One, nothing like that. Of course, you moved him to probably about where I'll have him. The one thing I'll say is that, you know, before last year with when Kiki Kuti kind of emerged a little bit, I mean, Fuller basically was like a guarantee, something that looked unsustainable, but he was constantly scoring touchdowns and he was succeeding nearly every single game that he'd ever played in his career with Deshaun Watson. So, you know, Stills being there does certainly change things, but QT has really not been involved here. So to the extent Stills remains injured, you know, I'd certainly be a little more inclined to hold on to Fuller because I think he will be a little more reliable, generally speaking. But in terms of selling high off this game, of course, because this is it's an obvious statement, is the best you're going to see from Fuller this season. How about your biggest loser here, Tex?
Biggest loser, it might be a little bit under the radar, but it's something that I was really, it was one of my biggest things this week that I was paying attention to. It's Sterling Shepard is the biggest loser. And I say that because he ran 80% of his routes from the slot over the first 4 weeks of the season. And with Golden Tate coming back, I was really curious to see who was using the slot, who was used on the perimeter. And it kind of went as we expected. Sterling Shepard went to the perimeter. He only ran 30% of his routes from the slot, which is a massive decline. And this is a problem because I did a study this offseason that kind of looked at wide receivers who struggled on the slot versus perimeter performance. And I wanted to see who relied on slot snaps to dictate the performances. And Sterling Shepard, we're now in the fourth season of his career. He has never scored a touchdown on the perimeter. In terms of non-slot performance, over the last two seasons, he ranks 49th among 66 wide receivers that qualified. They basically had to have at least 40 targets in each season. So there were 66 wide receivers. He ranked 49th in non-slot performance. Golden Tate was like 56th or something like that. So Golden Tate was in the same boat. And I felt like they have two slot receivers. Like, what the hell are they going to do here? And knowing that Shepard played 70% of his snaps on the perimeter this week, it's definitely hurting to his production. And now, obviously, he's going to be playing Thursday night against the Patriots, which is going to be a terrible matchup. So, yeah, Sterling Shepard, you are the biggest loser.
Yeah, that is an interesting call. And your reasoning is absolutely spot on. Now, it's interesting because fantasy owners are probably going to look at this game, and it's a tough matchup against Minnesota. Just generally speaking, they have a strong defense. But he went 5 for 49. So you're like, okay, well, that's not great, but that's not something. But they might look at the 10 targets and think, oh, wow, this is an opportunity actually perhaps to buy given the target share. So it is really, this is, I'll be honest, Tex, this is my favorite loser that you've ever thrown out there since we've started this segment of the podcast. Let me ask you something. You had him at 30th, I believe, in half PPR. Where are you moving him after this game?
I moved him down to wide receiver 38, so he's outside the top 36 now. I was considering him like a start with Daniel Jones, like Daniel Jones and him. And the reason I think he had 10 targets is because Golden Tate hasn't really had many reps with Daniel Jones. Like, it was going to take some time. That was a conversation Bobby and I had on the podcast because Bobby's like, Golden Tate's a sure thing, wide receiver 3. I'm like, I don't want to say that just yet because we saw, and he rattled off a bunch of stats about Golden Tate with Detroit. And I'm like, Bobby, he was with that team for years. I mean, you can't just automatically assume he walks into a team and produces. Like, look at what happened when he went to the Eagles. You know, he's a guy that struggled and they slowly started cutting his snaps. I know he scored a touchdown against my beloved Bears in the playoff game to ruin their chances of advancing, but Golden Tate wasn't good with the Eagles. And so why are we automatically assuming he's going to be good with the Giants? Now, he does have the most valuable role in terms of playing in the slot. That's obviously going to help. But he has no chemistry with Daniel Jones right now.
Yeah, he, you know, of course, missing the first four games is something that's always going to affect a receiver. And I really don't know. I cannot judge the Giants offense yet. You know, they had the huge first time when he came out against the Bucs. And it's really just hasn't looked fantastic since then. They didn't look great against the Redskins at all. So it's definitely wait and see mode. But I do like that you're having Shepard here as somebody who loses value significantly outside of that wide receiver three range. I'm not sure where I'll have him. I had him right around where you did. I'll drop him for sure. He might still be the borderline, but my guess is we're going to be right around the same area. By the way, if you were thinking, man, I wish there was some way to see all your content over at Instagram, well, you're in luck. There is, because we're on Instagram, where you can obviously find us at Fantasy Pros. You can access our articles, videos, store, whatever you want. Just search for us at Fantasy Pros over at Instagram and look around to your heart's content. Let's move on to my favorite segment, which we could not do last week because just I had a little bit of a rough week and couldn't get here on time, but it is What's Your Problem, Man, where I basically yell at tags. So let's start this off with, what's your problem with DJ Chark? Man, I mean, look, this is the second time he's been in this segment. Now, admittedly, he was 13 spots higher in your rest of season rankings coming into this week than he was when I yelled at you in week three. But he is 39th in your rest of season rankings heading into today. 11 targets, 8 catches, 164 yards, 2 touchdowns. Did you lose some weird food-oriented bet or something with Bobby where the punishment is that you are forced to keep Chark way too low, or what's happening here? Please tell me he's rising significantly.
You know what's crazy is that I told a lot of people this week to play Chark, and on the Sunday morning live stream, a lot of people were asking me questions about Chark, and I was referring to him as kind of like a guy that you have to plug into wide receiver three moving forward with the way that they've been playing. And Gardner Minshew continues to prove that he's capable of getting him the ball. They're moving him around. They're actually putting him in the slot now. So the way they're using DJ Chark, like, I was watching today, and I'm like, geez, I need to keep moving this guy up, and I continue to do it. And it's like, this is one of my problems, right? We all have our vices, and we all have these things that we struggle with, and it's like last year with me with Philip Lindsay. You know, week one I was like, I'm not buying in. You know, it's just I was willing to let someone else go to the waiver wire and snag him. And you know, DJ Chark, I've slowly been coming along, because it's not like 38th or 39th wide receiver is terrible, but it's like now I moved him up to wide receiver 30 for the rest of the season, so he continues to climb up my board. The issue is I can't say that, like, I would rather have him moving forward than someone like a DJ Moore, like a Josh Gordon, like a Larry Fitzgerald. I can't put him over those guys just because I feel like I have too big of a sample size of what those guys can do. I don't have an issue if somebody wants to do it, but this is, so when you ask what is my problem, it's that I'm slow to come around on players that don't have a proven history.
I think that is fair, and I don't think that that's really a problem. I'm the same way, but I feel like in recent years, I've become more open to moving guys off of performances early in the, I mean, I'm sure you had Terry McLaurin, you know, before any of this started. You know, he was injured last week and stuff like that. Like, we rose him immediately. Now, you know, of course, we hadn't seen anything from him before, so it's a little different. But in the end, look, I had Chark 31st coming into this week. I was buying him. I don't know how much more he's going to rise, because I agree, like, it's a little crazy at this point. And it does get to a point where you're like, yeah, if you're telling me DJ Moore is the guy who I've got to choose between, I'm probably going with DJ Moore, although not definitely. It's a little close. But at this point, you have him basically, you said 30th, I believe. That's acceptable. Tags. I will allow this. I look forward to bringing him up next week when he goes for 3 touchdowns and we can really get angry about it. All right, Tags, you had OJ Howard 7th. In your rest of season rankings at tight end coming into this game. 2 targets, 1 catch, 10 yards against the Saints. What is your problem generally in that? Why are you ranking OJ Howard so high still?
I mean, all you have to do is look at the landscape at tight end. That's why.
Hold on. I'm going to jump on it here, because I completely agree with you. Tight end is terrible. But I mean, Tags, I had this done so that I could do this and we could have fun with this on this podcast. Item 17th coming in. Like, I mean, I get it. The landscape is terrible, but I will take half of these terrible people that you are just disregarding and just put them right in my lineup over Howard. I mean, is there any hope here whatsoever? You're holding on to him if you own him?
I mean, unless you have a top eight tight end, yeah, I'm going to hold him. I mean, it sucks. This week was a terrible matchup against New Orleans. New Orleans has been really friggin' good against tight ends the last few years, so it's not the matchup that you were going to target to begin with. They have Carolina next week. Carolina has been a semi-decent matchup. You have the bye week. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that O.J. Howard is going to turn into a stud. I'm not. But I am going to tell you that I believe he has a better chance than Vance McDonald. He has a better chance than Greg Olsen, than Jimmy Graham, than T.J. Hockenson, than Jack Doyle. Like, these names are terrible. Like, come on. So the eight tight ends, if you have one of these guys, yes, you can move on from O.J. Howard. If you have Kelce, Kittle, Ertz, Evan Engram, Darren Waller, Mark Andrews, Austin Hooper, Will Dissly, that is the end of the list. Because, again, am I going to cut O.J. Howard for Greg Olsen, who had zero catches, by the way? Am I going to cut him for Delanie Walker, who had one catch? And also, by the way, over the last 2 weeks, he's ranked third on his team in tight end snaps. He's falling down. Vance McDonald's with a third-string quarterback. His second-string quarterback sucks. Jimmy Graham, he's moving up, but it's like, do we want to trust him after 2 weeks of performance? T.J. Hockenson has had like 2 one-catch games. Please, someone, tell me why O.J. Howard is so terrible when everybody else is clearly just as terrible.
I mean, I guess here that the argument is, well, everybody sucks. So I'm going to take the guy who
has shown the ability not to suck.
I understand. I understand. But you know what? I have seen zero here. I don't see the game. Even, you know, because, you know, at least Delanie Walker has the game. Greg Olsen has a game where they're, like, usable. There's nothing to suggest. He's not getting targets. He's not putting up any sort of numbers. It's very difficult for me to kind of... He's at the back of my list. What you're saying makes sense. He has more upside than pretty much all of these guys that you're sort of throwing out. But Hockenson? No way. I'm taking Hockenson over him. I'm not thinking twice about it. I mean...
It's just because of the expectations, really. Like, the sky-high expectations. And it's like I said, Hockenson had one great game, and then he had two horrendous games. Worse than O.J. Howard, as a matter of fact. But we're gravitating towards like that one performance. And
Look, even with that, let's not debate Hockenson here. But again, he was getting targeted in the red zone. He had touchdowns that were called back. There's at least something. There's nothing that gives me excitement. Or I'm sure it doesn't really with you. It's just that everything sucks, so I'll take the opposite. That's a defendable position. I'm not going to defend it because I take the opposite position, but that's fine. But anyway, let's get into some players who, you know, actually performed today. And let's start with the Thursday game. Seahawks 30, Rams 29, a really, really good game here. Let's start with the Seahawks. Let's talk about Chris Carson, okay? A couple of weeks ago, he was basically one fumble away from losing his job. He performed extremely well against the Cardinals in week 4. Then he comes back in the short week, 27 for 118 on the ground. And after a little bobbling, he catches that one pass for a late touchdown. Now, Rashad Penny did come back here. He saw 6 carries. He caught 2 passes. Are all concerns with Chris Carson completely gone here, or are you still nervous if you're carrying him as like a borderline RB1 or strong RB2?
All concerns are gone. 28 of 36 touches for the running backs went to him. He looked phenomenal. Like, he gets yardage when it's not there. He's a grinder, man. Like, he's the guy. He's like a Marshawn Lynch type running back where he's going to bounce off tacklers. He's going to fight for every last yard. Whereas Rashad Penny is the type of guy that's going to look for, he's going to continually pound the ball and he's going to hope for that one big opening and break a long run. He's more of like that guy that could break long runs. Whereas Carson's just a grinder. He's going to continue to grind it out. And knowing that all those fumbles took place with Chris Carson, and, you know, Pete Carroll has continually gone to the podium and said, you guys will see how much I trust him. And he continues to go back to him, knowing that he gets it done in the passing game too. He's a rare three down back that has 20 touch potential every single time they take the field. So Chris Carson was somebody I expressed worry last week on our podcast too. But after watching this game, I'm not worried anymore. I'm really not.
I mean, this is like what you just pray that you see from these guys who are in trouble, right? You're just like, man, you're in such a great situation. If you could just pull through and stop the fumbles and stop getting rid of this. And not only that, as you said, he has run just like an absolute madman over the last 2 weeks. You could throw it out maybe against Arizona because of how leaky the defense is, but not on Thursday night where he just ran hard the entire time. It was great to see. I'm completely in agreement. I was real worried about him, even though I tried not to be, but after, you know, week 3, I really was basically thought that he was one fumble away from losing the job. I agree. Completely rock solid. Zero concerns from me either. Now, on the Rams side, Brandon Cooks leaves with a concussion. You'll obviously want to monitor that. And we could talk about Jared Goff, but we went through him pretty heavily last week with the Bucks game. It's another game here where he throws for a ton of yards, 395. Really doesn't look great though overall, so more of the same. But let us instead talk a bit about Todd Gurley. He dominates the running back snaps here, and he scores just 2 touchdowns, but he just has 15 for 51 on the ground, 3 catches for just 6 yards. He loses a fumble. So let me ask you something. 2 touchdown game here. Todd Gurley, stock after this game, up, down, or the same?
Up quite a bit. He's someone that I mean, if you can buy right now, if you play in a competitive league and someone's worried about him, like his snaps, I've been watching this. So he went the first 2 weeks, it was 70% and then 63% of the snaps, and there was concern. And then it's been 73, 75, and then 93% of the snaps against the Seahawks. They have a tough front seven. Like, that's the strength of the Seahawks defense. You could beat them through the air. So is it surprising to see Goff make a few good throws? No, he made a few bad ones too. The biggest concern is that Jared Goff, over his last 13 games, has averaged just 1.08 passing touchdowns per game, compared to the first 26 games under Sean McVay, where he threw 2.08 touchdowns per game. So it's a full touchdown per game less, and it coincides back to when Todd Gurley, you know, initially hurt his knee, and then they brought in C.J. Anderson, all that stuff. So you have to wonder, they need Todd Gurley, they need to get him going, and I think that them getting him out there for 93% of the snaps, it helped. And I mean, you even saw it with Goff. Goff played better as that game went on. So if there's anything to take away from that game, it's that Jared Goff looked better as the game went on. It was probably the best he's looked in a little while. Like, he hasn't looked great this year. He didn't look great against Tampa Bay. But knowing that Todd Gurley was on the field for 93%, that could be the common denominator here. So I expect them to ride Todd Gurley a little bit more going forward.
Thing is, though, he didn't look great in the second half. You know, he did a lot of his production, unless if memory serves, in the first half. And then he kind of didn't come out, didn't look quite as good in the second half. For me, it's the same. I agree, the snap share is huge, and that's really what we're looking at in the end. But I just don't love the way he's running tags. Like, I mean, I get it, and maybe, you know, first of all, where do you have him? You had him 14th coming in. Do you still have him? What?
I moved him up, and I thought he looked like, I don't know if people haven't been able to see Todd Gurley. Like, he looked like crap through the first few weeks, and like, he was running very timid, didn't have any urgency. I thought he looked better against Seattle, and I know some people have disagreed with me on that, and I see what they see, but I have him as RB10 right now. I am like suggesting everybody hold him. If you have him in a fantasy league and someone's trying to buy him, I suggest holding him unless you're getting like phenomenal value in return.
Okay, as usual, I have not done my rest of season rankings. I will start updating them tomorrow. My guess is he'll you know, he was 16 coming in. He'll probably just be 15, maybe 14. I don't move him quite as much after this performance, but I agree that the percentage of snaps that he played, Malcolm Brown is no longer a thing. That's pretty critical there whenever you're judging any running back. Let's move on to today's games. Bills 14, Titans 7, a game that really, even though they won by a touchdown, the Bills kind of had no business winning here. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is the game with the fewest fantasy takeaways. 2 good defenses, kind of a grinded out offenses. Josh Allen recovers from his concussion in time to play. He throws for 219 yards and 2 touchdowns. No Devin Singletary again here. So Frank Gore gets the bulk of the work, 14 for 60 on the ground. John Brown, 5 catches for 75 yards. Cole Beasley, a little disappointing, quiet here, 3 catches, 21 yards. Anything to say about the Bills here?
Not really. No big takeaways from the Bills. John Brown had like, I think he had like five catches for 75 yards in the first half, and then like nothing happened. He never even saw a target after that. They went run heavy. The biggest takeaway for me from this game is going over to the Titans side of the ball. It's Derrick Henry. He's losing the passing down work, and we knew it was going to happen, right? Like, this is a guy that had never caught more than 15 passes in a year at the college level, at the pro level, and the Titans were like, we're going to ride him. You know, we're going to use him as a workhorse. He's going to do work in the passing game. He's just been underused. He saw 5 targets in the first 2 weeks, and now he's seen just 3 targets in the last 3 weeks combined, including 0, a big fat 0 in this game. It's kind of going back to what it was last year, unfortunately. I mean, he's not great in the passing game, but they should be using him a little bit. Deion Lewis is not the guy. He's not the answer, the one that's going to get things done. So unfortunately, Derrick Henry's, he's one of the bigger losers of this week, to be honest with you, even though he scored a touchdown, and that's to be expected. Buffalo, now under McDermott, they've now played 37 games. They've allowed 38 rushing touchdowns in those 37 games. So I expected a touchdown out of Derrick Henry here, but I was really curious to see if the passing down usage was trending in that direction to where he got 0, and it absolutely is. And Deion Lewis got a 4 targets in this game. So yeah, Derrick Henry's like a sell if you can sell him.
I mean, the one thing is that I think Derrick Henry had another touchdown called back unless I completely made that up, but I thought I saw him score again, and then I saw them going back. So, you know, I agree here, but again, I mean, 4 targets. This was not a game where, you know, Deion Lewis was out there and I mean, completely dominating sort of the work. I agree. Henry's I feel like you going with Henry, and regardless of what he gets in the past, I'm assuming he's going to get nothing in the passing game, and it doesn't really worry me all that much because he's just going to completely dominate carries on the ground. That I don't expect the Titans to be trailing, you know, too often by enough that I think they need to hurry up. And although they did it here in this game, you know, again, when they were down against the Jaguars, it was mostly Henry in that game. So I'm not quite sort of taking the negative away from him here, but certainly seeing Lewis in the game getting targets for really the first time this season is slightly worrisome, although probably I'm not quite getting too worked up about it, as you are because you hate Derrick Henry. All right, look, before we go further, let's talk briefly about Pristine Auction, okay? Because if you want to buy any sort of memorabilia, sports or otherwise, then PristineAuction.com is your one-stop shop. My son hates swimming. To get him to go to his swim lessons, I bribe him. That is not a joke. That's literally, if you go in and you don't scream and you don't yell and you just let your instructor sort of carry you around, I will get you something. And almost without fail, it's with something from Pristine Auction. It's usually something from the Patriots, which kills a little part of me every time, but sometimes it's something from the Mets or the Celtics or something I can live with, because you can get pretty much anything you want at Pristine Auction. They have hundreds of auctions daily. Everything is guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources, and it is free to register and free to bid. And because they have hundreds of auctions every day, the prices that you can get are insane. I mean, yesterday I saw a signed Saquon Barkley jersey for $84 and a signed Tyreek Hill jersey for $59. It is awesome. Trust me, you might get addicted, but it's completely worth it. Just go to pristineauction.com. That's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com and use our registration code FANTASYPROS in the registration field when you sign up, and you'll get a free $5 credit. And thanks to our good friends at Pristine Auction, we are running the Julian Edelman signed helmet giveaway this month. Just go to fantasypros.com/contest if you want more details. To enter, just leave a review for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and send a screenshot of that review to contest@fantasypros.com. That's it. Takes 2 seconds. And I actually have one of these because I bought one for my son, so trust me, it's really cool. All right, Tags, let's move on to a more interesting game here. Texans 53, Falcons 32. Friendly reminder that you should start your offensive playmakers against the Falcons. look, we talked about Will Fuller over here, but Deshaun Watson throws for 426 yards and 5 touchdowns. He adds 47 yards rushing. The dude who hates you about DeAndre Hopkins because you can't sell high is going to look at his line and see 7 catches for 88 yards. I will note, by the way, that on the Betting Pros NFL podcast, my prop bet was DeAndre Hopkins. I believe it was over 83.5 yards, and he got the garbage time catch for 88 yards. So I thank you. Otherwise, I was going to have to do that show in a British accent. That is not a joke. That was my bet. So we're okay there. Carlos Hyde rushes 21 times for 60 yards and a touchdown. Duke Johnson rushes 9 times for 59 yards. Okay, real quick, let's just talk about the running game here, unless you want to talk to that guy about DeAndre Hopkins and whether or not you're worried. But, you know, with the running back, Carlos Hyde, you know, 21 times for 60 yards. That's not great. He does score the touchdown. And Duke Johnson, only 9 times, but 59 yards. Much better. I mean, I assume that you still prefer Carlos Hyde rest of season, or how do you view both these guys going
forward?
Yeah,
for sure. It'd be Hyde. I figured this was a game they could actually use Duke Johnson a bit more, and he was like one of my sleepers this week that I thought you could have gotten flex value out of. And it's not that he had a terrible game, like 67 yards, something like that. But yeah, Carlos Hyde's the one to own. I felt like the game, I was like, all right, the Duke Johnson sleeper is going to work out, because like the first carry of the game, or maybe the second carry of the game, Carlos Hyde fumbled the ball and lost 14 yards. And so basically, if we take that one away, he would have had 74 yards on 20 carries, which looks a lot better than 21 for 60. But they continued to go to him. They continue to do this. So it's kind of like he is the Lamar Miller of this offense. And that's a guy that, you know, he's not sexy. He's not a guy that you're going to trade for and be like, oh, he's going to win my league. But he's a guy you can plug in as a high-end RB3 most weeks and get it done, especially if the Texans are going to start stretching the field with Will Fuller, getting Kiki QT back involved in the offense. Hopkins is going to go. You know, I mean, there's so many moving parts, and that's the reason that I wanted to like, you know, Lamar Miller before he tore his ACL. So, yeah, Carlos Hyde, RB3 moving forward.
Yeah, no, I agree with you here. You know, Johnson looks good. That's the only thing that keeps me a little bit, because when you had Lamar Miller, it wasn't like, you know, you weren't looking at blue and being like, oh man, if only he could get more carries, he would totally dominate this game. You know, it was just like, oh, Lamar Miller, whatever. Here you have Duke Johnson, who looks good in recent weeks, you know? And so it would kind of be nice to see him get more. Either way, they're against the Chiefs next week, so everybody kind of isn't playing that game. On the other side of the ball, Matt Ryan throws for 330 yards and three touchdowns, trying desperately to catch up. He also runs for a touchdown. Calvin Ridley gets back on track here with 5 for 88 and a score. Mohamed Sanu finds the end zone. Julio Jones, just 3 catches for 42 yards. Very quickly, are there any concerns whatsoever with Julio Jones, or is this just the ups and downs of a fantasy season?
Nope, this is just the ups and downs that's going to happen. They're going to happen from time to time, and everybody will always panic about Julio, and it's been 2 weeks now in a row, but everybody was worried about Ridley coming into this week. It's going to happen, guys. Mohamed Sanu is not going to catch a touchdown every week. He's not going to see 12 targets like he did last week, and things are going to even out, fortunately. And the best part about this Falcons offense, like, buy. Like, if you can get Matt Ryan at a discount, people are like, oh, it's the Texans, whatever. Buy Matt Ryan. Their defense is so bad. They're going to be throwing the ball an awful lot. And it's really good to see Devonta Freeman involved in the passing game as well. Ito Smith actually had more receptions than Devonta Freeman. But again, when you have a team that's going to be trailing as much as the Falcons are, you know, they can hang with other teams. Like, it's one thing to play a team like the Dolphins and be like, oh, I want to start all my fantasy players against them, because, you know, they're just a bad football team, right? But it's another thing when you have a team like the Falcons who can keep up pace with them. You know, they can score on any team in the NFL. I want every bit of this Falcons offense I can get my hands on, to be honest.
I was going to ask you about Freeman. So it sounds like you've kind of given your opinion here. But, you know, just 11 for 30 on the ground. He does catch the 5 passes for 42 yards, and he catches the touchdown. So this is the 4th time in 5 games that he's been held to 30 yards or fewer on the ground. But he has at least 3 catches in every game. It's clearly he's still dominating, as you said, the running back touches over Ito Smith. So overall, you're basically saying, because of his involvement in the passing game, because they're going to be playing from behind because of all that stuff, you're fine with Freeman, right? You don't really have concerns despite the lack of production on the ground?
There are definitely concerns with his production because he hasn't been very good. But I'm sorry, I'm watching in the middle of this Packers game. This Packers Cowboys game is going on in the background, and Amari Cooper just made a ridiculous Madden style move where he caught a ball along the sideline, did like a complete 360 to spin off a defender and score a touchdown.
I thought we've established that you're not allowed to watch Amari Cooper during these podcast acts, because
that's probably the best scenario. But no, I mean, Devonta Freeman is a guy that he's like a low-end RB2, high-end RB3 at worst. He is sharing carries more than you would like him to, but there will be better days. The Texans they're a solid run defense. They were in Houston for this game. They were playing from behind, so they're... But again, seeing him get that touchdown through the air is definitely reassuring. I don't want to panic about this offense, honestly. Like, this is like last year all over again, and you wanted parts of this offense.
Yeah. No, it's fine, because I felt the same way, but I think that some fantasy owners might see his numbers on the ground and be concerned. But it's kind of how I felt with Leonard Fournette this entire time, you know, before he's now begun producing over the last couple of games. It's that his involvement in the passing game just basically gives him a floor that you don't really have to be concerned about. So you can plug him in there every time, even if he's going to be stifled on the ground a little bit. So we're in agreement there. Let's move on to Ravens 26, Steelers 23 in overtime. Mason Rudolph got knocked out of this game and hospitalized with a significant hit. I think I just saw a tweet from Schefter saying he's been released from the hospital. So all the best to him. It was really, really scary looking. Devlin Hodges performs admirably, nearly pulls out the game. But let's start with the Ravens first before we get to this impact on the Steelers. Mark Ingram gains just 44 yards on 19 carries. He does find the end zone. Hollywood Brown fights through an apparent ankle injury, I believe. He scores a touchdown, but just 22 yards. Lamar Jackson throws for just 161 yards, 1 touchdown, and 3 interceptions. Now, he does rush for 70 yards, but look, are we overrating Lamar Jackson by having him, both of us, as a top 3 QB? Which, you know, we both had him coming into the game. I know his rushing ability gives him a pretty high floor, but, I mean, he's thrown just one, accounted, actually, for just 1 touchdown in 2 of his last 3 games. Are we overrating him a little bit?
Not really, just because, like, you go back to what he did, like, 2 weeks ago against Kansas City. He didn't throw a single touchdown in that game. He still posted 21.3 fantasy points. This just goes back to, like, the whole Josh Allen conversation, where it's like, you know, just because a quarterback's struggling to throw the ball through the air, it doesn't make him a bad fantasy quarterback. And that's where we're at with Lamar Jackson. Like, he is running the ball quite a bit. He totaled 70 yards on the ground in this game, and that's going to continue to happen if he's going to continue to struggle as a passer. Fortunately, you know, if Marquise Brown, provided he's healthy, like, that's a big game changer. Because if he were to miss time, I would definitely downgrade Lamar Jackson as a passer. And I think we'd go back to the way that he was last year, where it's like we were viewing him as a borderline QB1, one that came with a really high floor, but his ceiling might not be as high as some of the other players. I want to say, last year, he didn't have a single game where he finished better than like the QB 10 or something like that. So it was like he was continually in that, you know, low-end QB1, high-end QB2 conversation. But the addition of Marquise Brown, it cleared out the safety. It you know, took an extra defender essentially away from the focus on him running the ball. It gave him the outlet to throw a deep ball and have someone run under it. But if Marquise Brown's out of the lineup, that's definitely going to hurt. So yeah, if he misses time, I'm concerned. And Lamar Jackson hasn't looked great as a passer. I know the three interceptions, one definitely wasn't his fault. It bounced off the tight end's hands. And the other one, I didn't get to see the replay on it. I saw it as it happened live, and it looked like it may have been on the tight end as well. But either way, Lamar Jackson did not look great from what I saw today in that game. He missed a few passes. Like one would have been a surefire touchdown to Seth Roberts in the end zone. Just overthrew him.
Yeah, he hasn't looked great passing the ball at all. Kind of the last few games. I know he had three touchdowns last week, but I haven't loved what I've seen from him. Now they do get the Bengals next week, so that's kind of a cure-all. But overall, I'm gonna have to look at it closely. But the top five here, with the way Watson is able to kind of do these things, with the way Russell Wilson is playing at this point, I could see him maybe dropping down to five when all is said and done. But I don't think he's gonna fall out of there. So I'm glad that we're generally in agreement. Slightly concerned. I think what you saw the first two games, where you're like, holy cow, this could be like a Patrick Mahomes type season. Not going to come to fruition, but overall, his just incredibly high floor with the rushing ability certainly keeps him as one of the elite QBs. On the other side of the ball, Juju Smith-Schuster catches all seven of his targets for 75 yards in the score. He does lose a fumble. James Conner, just 55 yards rushing, but he does score a touchdown. So, I mean, there weren't too many surprises, at least for me. I don't know about for you, but I guess my question really is, look, we already downgraded both Smith-Schuster and Conner significantly after the Roethlisberger injury. Rudolph was hospitalized after this hit. I think it's probably, you don't know, but you'd have to think he might miss next week's game. If he does, or if he needs to miss significant time, how much more do you think you'd have to downgrade Connor or Smith-Schuster?
This is the exact opposite scenario of the Falcons offense. I want zero part of the Steelers right now. Like, James Conner is down. I think I have him outside my top 18 running backs moving forward.
Yeah, you had him 17 coming in even before this game, so...
I mean, I'm really worried about this offense in general. Like, it's not good with Mason Rudolph under the center, let alone going to Hodges. And then, like, Juju, I moved him down to wide receiver 19 after this game. I know he had a good game. He had seven catches, 75 yards. But the concern is that everything that he's done over the last 3 weeks has been after the catch. Like, of the 171 yards that he has, 113 of them have come after the catch. That cannot keep up. It can't happen, guys. And if he's not getting the ball down the field at all, this is turning into like a slot receiver, like a Cole Beasley type situation, which you don't want to happen. So I love Juju Smith-Schuster, the player. I love him, the person. I wish nothing but the best for him. But if you own him in fantasy, this is your opportunity to sell high.
And even if Rudolph is there, you're saying you're still downgrading him, right?
I am, yes.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I had him 16 coming in, and he's going down a little bit, even with the game. I agree. I mean, Connor to me is still, I mean, you haven't dropped him out of RB2 range, right?
No, I haven't done that.
Okay, yeah. I mean, look, this is for a guy like that who's going to dominate the carries, who's going to get the goal line work, he of course is someone who you still start. But Smith-Schuster, yeah, it's worrisome. And there's really nobody else at all in that passing game that you're concerned about. You know, it's not Vance McDonald, isn't going to scare you or anything like that. So at this point, yeah, it's unfortunate. Hopefully Rudolph is fine, which certainly would be better than Hodges, but either way, it's not a good look for the Steelers. Patriots 33, Redskins 7. Patriots actually didn't look great early on here, but they managed to narrowly squeak by. Brady throws for 348 yards and three scores with the pick. Sony Michel gains 91 yards rushing with a score plus three catches for 32 yards. Julian Edelman, eight catches for 110 yards. And the score, look, I don't want to take away too much here because the Pats literally could have probably won this game if you and I were their best playmakers. But are there any concerns at all with Josh Gordon here? Eight targets, just five catches for 59 yards. He's still seeing the targets, but he hasn't topped 83 yards yet in a single game. He hasn't scored a touchdown since week one. Are there any concerns here going forward?
Nope. He's one of the best buy lows in fantasy football. He's a guy that, you know, when you see Brady, like, this is my biggest takeaway. I've already started, like, obviously, like, you know, I have to kind of like get things going early in the week to do the primer. And the Patriots have outscored their opponents 155-34 this year, including this week. Despite that, Tom Brady has averaged 37.4 pass attempts per game. That's a lot. okay, including 42 against the Redskins. So it just goes to show that their offense is having to move the ball through the short passing game. They're getting the ball. Josh Gordon had a good matchup this week against Josh Norman, but Norman is the best cornerback on the Redskins roster. So it made sense for Julian Edelman to get involved if he was healthy. We just didn't know if Julian Edelman was playing at 100%. I did expect a much bigger game from Philip Dorsett if Josh Gordon didn't kind of go off, but it is what it is. I am not worried about the Patriots offense. Tom Brady is showing the ability to do whatever he has to do. If he has to ding and dunk the ball, you know, down the field, he'll do that. If you want to throw the ball over the top, you know, Josh Gordon's a guy that could win in one-on-one situations, and Brady's willing to trust him. So he's a guy I'm willing to buy right now in fantasy football. And like, if you can sell Will Fuller to get Josh Gordon, he's one of those guys I would take over Will Fuller.
So would you say roughly like a borderline wide receiver two around that range?
I have him as the wide receiver 27 right now, and that's half PPR format. So it's like a wide receiver three, but he comes with top 12 upside every single game.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I have no problem with that. I'm 24 coming in. I'm not really worried about it either, but I know, you know, you and I take questions all the time on Twitter, and I know that people are going to be, you know, talking about it. And I'm just going to say, you can't buy low on Josh Gordon, dude, or whatever it is that you said about that. Let's move on. Bro, darn. Oh, I had it right there.
What's your problem, man?
Okay. On the Redskins, look, they're a terrible, terrible team, but they were up against an elite defense. They do nothing on the ground. Terry McLaurin goes 3 for 51. I mean, you own McLaurin still. You own Chris Thompson in PPR leagues. Is there anything else to say about the Redskins?
Nah, they play the...
Am I even overstating it, by the way? I mean, you still own McLaurin, right? And you still own Chris Thompson in PPR leagues, right?
Yeah. I mean, and even Adrian Peterson, for that matter, because he's playing the Dolphins this week. So the Dolphins is going to be a good matchup. I mean, if there's one last hurrah for Adrian Peterson, it's against the Dolphins. But you don't want to take too much away from McLaurin in this one. I'm just happy to see him back on the field. The Patriots, by the way, like coming into this game, to quarterbacks, not to wide receivers, to quarterbacks, they allowed 5.88 fantasy points per game to quarterbacks. That number actually went down after today. Here's some players who... This was from the primer. Here are some players who were averaging more than that. Hayden Hurst, Blake Jarwin, Dawson Knox, Benny Fowler, Keyshawn Johnson, and Darius Slayton.
I think that makes your point. I mean, I think that's really what it is. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think I really, really enjoy that. And I don't really have much to add to it. I don't know what else I could say. So, yeah, I mean, I think that kind of says it all then. All right. Let's move on to the next game. Cardinals 26, Bengals 23. I am greedy, Tags. I honestly expected more here. I mean, Murray throws for 253 yards through the air, but he adds 93 yards rushing and a score. David Johnson gains 156 total yards, but Chase Edmonds scores the rushing touchdown on a long run. Larry Fitzgerald, 6 catches for 58 yards with no Christian Kirk here. Does anything in this game move the needle on any Arizona player here?
It just ticked me off is all. I mean, if there was one player that like took away my chance at winning a lot of money in DFS this week, it's David Johnson. The one game that they decide to not give him like 90% of the touches is the week that I decide to play him on DFS. And of course, Chase Edmonds steals 68 yards on the ground, 18 yards through the air, and a touchdown on the ground. Like, that was the one thing that did not go as planned this week that I'm a little peeved about. But I mean, outside of that, the offense wasn't going to move as smoothly without Christian Kirk out there, because the offense just can't run the same way because they don't have their multiple slot receiver sets that they want to do. And it seems like Andy Isabella, for whatever reason, like they draft him as high as they did and then they refuse to put him on the field. It makes no sense, but it is what it is, whatever. But yeah, I'm kind of down on this offense. Like, Cliff Kingsbury was supposed to come in and do stuff, and I said, you know, take it easy. Let's just see what happens. And I haven't been impressed with him or Kyler Murray to this point. I mean, Murray's he's a threat with his legs, but in terms of what he does with his arm so far, he's been mediocre.
Yeah, I agree. It hasn't been as accurate as I expected, I think, from everything I had seen. And just, yeah, this offense is not... I kind of, you know, was sort of hoping for the Chip Kelly effect where, wow, it's this amazing offense. People can't catch up and it's spread out, and nothing like that whatsoever. I mean, look, Murray, it's still a borderline QB1 because of what he can give you with his legs, and you're starting Larry Fitzgerald every week, especially in anything that gives you any points for receptions or anything like that. And David Johnson's still an RB1, but overall, yeah, I agree. It's certainly been disappointing based on what we were expecting. On the other side of the ball, the Bengals were kind of quiet early on, but then Andy Dalton winds up throwing for 262 yards and 2 scores, one to Tyler Boyd, who sees 14 targets, 10 catches for 123 yards. The other to Auden Tate, who totals just 26 yards. Joe Mixon with 93 yards on 19 carries plus a catch for 16 yards. Anything other than you really wish that Joe Mixon were on a different team?
We definitely wish he was on a different team. I mean, this was, I mean, it was promising to see them come back and have a decent performance and put 23 points up. But again, I mean, it was against the Cardinals, so we can't take away too much from it. This is the battle of the no win teams. And it's like, why are you guys celebrating a win here? You should want to lose and get a higher draft pick. Oh, wait, you already did that, Cardinals. Sorry. But Mixon, he's criminally underused in the passing game. He sees one target in this game. Auden Tate dropped a touchdown in the first quarter. I know he finished with one, and it's kind of like, whew, thank God that worked out. But Tyler Eifert was the biggest disappointment here.
Ugh.
I mean, what happened was Tyler Boyd essentially stole some of that production, and Tyler Eifert actually did have a touchdown, a chance to score a touchdown. The ball was thrown behind him, but he could have snagged it. So it could have easily been, you know, a 3-catch, 20-yard, 1-touchdown game, which would have salvaged things for us. But Eifert, unfortunately, ended the streak against the Arizona Cardinals, where they allowed top 5 fantasy tight ends. So, yeah, that part stunk. But outside of that, it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm a little mildly, I mean, this is a great matchup, of course, for the Bengals offense. So, I mean, you know, Boyd has a great game, but everybody, and Mixon was fine. You're always wanting more when you own Joe Mixon. But in the end, I'm a little concerned just about the outlook for the Bengals offense. It is compared to what we thought it was going to be even a week or two ago, because I do think that the absence of John Ross, regardless of his actual production, I just think his speed element is kind of almost a necessary element to Zach Taylor's offense, where it's going to clear out a little bit. And I think that they might suffer going forward a little bit more even. I mean, of course, they come out against Steelers. They couldn't do anything anyway. So it's not as if you're like, well, you know, how much lower could they go? But overall, going forward, I think I'm probably slightly downgrading someone like Boyd even after this game, just because of, you know, they were in comeback mode. So he's going to get the targets and everything like that. But, you know, against Baltimore, against Jacksonville, against the Rams, it's just, you know, I wanted to see a bigger game here, almost from everybody. Even, you know, Boyd had a great game, but, you know, almost from everybody. So for me, I agree, a little disappointed. And certainly Eifert, who I had in plenty of DFS lineups, certainly somebody who you're really, really, you know, 4 targets, 2 catches, 14 yards. Not really what you wanted there, of course. Panthers 34, Jaguars 27. Minshew Magic barely runs out here. And what I think was maybe the most entertaining game of the weekend, Christian McCaffrey is not a real human being. 237 total yards with 3 touchdowns. Now, he did miss the last couple of possessions here. Reggie Bonifon rumbles for a 59-yard score. I haven't seen anything tagged, I don't know if you have, to make it seem like McCaffrey's injury. Look, I mean, he was limping, you know, I haven't seen anything that says it's serious or makes me think he'll miss the Bucs game. Have you seen anything as we record?
No, I haven't seen anything in regards to it. But I hope he's all right, man. He's been so fun to watch. Like, he's just killing it, man. Like, there was, so the Jags over the last 20 games had allowed just one running back better than the RB10 performance. And then he goes out there and scores 3 touchdowns like it's nothing.
Yeah. I mean, he's incredible. He really is. I mean, he does it, you know, of course, through the air, on the ground. He's awesome. Kyle Allen keeps it conservative overall, just 181 yards passing with the score. It's good to see DJ Moore, who we mentioned earlier. He bounces back a bit here. He sees 8 targets, 6 catches for 91 yards. Curtis Samuel, a little disappointing, just 3 for 19. And as you mentioned, Greg Olsen shut out. Anything you take away here from the receivers, or is this just, this is kind of how it's going to go? Good games, bad games.
No. I mean, obviously having Jalen Ramsey out of the lineup, I expected something bigger out of Kyle Allen than just 181 yards and a touchdown, considering we saw Joe Flacco throw for 303 last week.
I mean, to be fair, they were up for most of the game. I mean, I felt like he almost ran to game manager right after it, you know, right after they got a lead.
No, it's true. I mean, he only had 30 pass attempts, but I mean, I don't know. It didn't seem like a great game. This was not a game that I chose to like watch like exclusively. Like, there's certain games that I have to pick out. So I have 4 monitors I'm able to watch games on, and I kind of have to pick and choose which ones I'm going to watch like most of the time. And I'll flip flop sometimes, but this was not a game I was like heavily invested in. So I did not watch the entire thing.
Okay. Well, that's fair, and I appreciate your honesty. But yeah, in the end, I watched this game a little more closely. Nothing really stuck out here. Again, it seemed like something where they got the lead, and they kind of tallied it back. With the Jaguars, we talked about DJ Chark already. You know, Leonard Fournette finally finds the end zone here, 23 for 108, plus another 4 catches for 24 yards on 7 targets. And again, I mentioned the targets are really what makes the difference here with Fournette. You pretty much have him as a guaranteed, you know, floor, even when he's not going to be successful running the ball, which he has been of late. D.D. Westbrook has a nice game here, 11 targets, 7 catches for 82 yards. Gardner Minshew throws 2 touchdowns, 374 yards. Anything you want to talk about here on the Jaguar side of the ball, with the understanding that you didn't watch the game all that closely?
The idea here is that DJ Chark and Gardner Minshew, I should say as well, are doing wonders for Leonard Fournette. You know, moving forward, I mean, like, we've continually seen 8-man fronts for Leonard Fournette throughout his career. Gardner Minshew throwing for 374 yards and 2 touchdowns against Carolina, who has been kind of a reverse funnel defense where you can run the ball on them, but they haven't allowed much through the air. Like, I'm gonna go back and look at NFL's Next Gen stats to see kind of like the percentages in terms of like the 8-man fronts that he's been seeing the last couple weeks. But Fournette's seeing bigger holes than he's seen in a long time. And, you know, once he gets a full head of steam, like, he's a difficult guy to slow down. He's very big. He's not afraid of contact. So it's good to see him, you know, kind of bounce back, because this was the running back that I thought people were getting when they were drafting him in the third round. And I liked him. But then after watching the first 3 weeks, I was like, ugh. It just looked ugly. But, you know, the more, it's almost like, you know, NFL teams, the more that I am like slowly starting to trust DJ Chark and move him up my rankings, it's almost like if NFL defenses are more like, okay, Gardner Minshew's the real deal. We have to account for his passing. We have to account for DJ Chark. So it's like these guys getting better is only benefiting Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything all that special, but like you said, when he does have a full head of steam, he's really difficult to take down. They do have the Saints next week, which is going to be a little tough, but you know, in the end, he's obviously locked and loaded in your lineup. And speaking of the Saints, let's move on there. Saints 31, Bucks 24. Let's start with the winning side here with the Saints. Teddy Bridgewater throws for 314 yards and 4 touchdowns. Michael Thomas, 11 of 13 for 182 and 2 touchdowns. Alvin Kamara with 104 total yards. We've seen videos recently of Breeze throwing, but, you know, they have a week 9 bye. There's almost no chance we see him before week 10. And the Saints have been keeping Bridgewater pretty much as a game manager so far. They completely owned it up here. Does this game in any way change how you look at anyone in the Saints offense so long as Bridgewater is under center?
I mean, this was a matchup to target with the pass catchers, because Tampa Bay, most people don't realize this, but coming into this game, I mean, I don't know if it's remained that way. I would assume it does, that they were the number one run defense in the NFL. So it was kind of like, you're going to have to move the ball through the air. And it was kind of be like that West Coast passing attack where it's going to be those short passes to get the ball throughout. And it kind of works too, because you had Bridgewater, who his average depth of target through his starts was like under 6 yards, which was stupid low. It was the lowest in the NFL by far. And it was like, all right, well, Michael Thomas can beat these Bucks wide cornerbacks over and over. And then Carlton Davis, one of their starting cornerbacks, got ejected from this game early on. So it allowed even more damage to be done by Michael Thomas. And you know, even Ted Ginn got into the action. But I mean, it's the Bucks. It's the Bucks defense. I don't want to take too much away from this. And I know some people were like, oh, Teddy Bridgewater's getting paid and he's going to hit free agency and this and that. I'm like, guys, it was one game. It was the Bucks.
Some of these people who you talk to, Tags, I mean,
he was impressive, but guys, come on. I mean,
yeah,
it's no.
No, I agree. It doesn't do. I mean, you and I both had Thomas ranked extremely high. We didn't drop him like we did with Schuster. That's just what you do. You know that these games are coming. He's still getting targeted all the time. So I agree. This is just kind of I think they saw the weakness and they attacked that weakness. I don't think that you can necessarily expect that to be the case. I mean, you can expect that philosophy to be the case, but not that they're all of a sudden going to start throwing, you know, Bridgewater's not going to throw 4 touchdowns every week, of course. On the other side of the ball, look, it's one thing when Julio Jones puts up 40 yards or whatever, but Mike Evans, 3 targets, 0 catches. Meanwhile, Chris Godwin, 9 targets, 7 catches, 125 yards, and 2 touchdowns. How concerned are you about Mike Evans, if at all?
I don't want to say I'm overly concerned. It was going to be a tough matchup. And these are things that I try and outline in the primer when I do it, is just that, you know, the history between him and Marshawn Lattimore hasn't been great to Mike Evans. Like there was a game in there that was really good, but I just don't think that this Saints defense is as bad as some people were led to believe. With Lattimore, he was tight in coverage a lot of the time against Julio and against Hopkins, like over the first couple weeks, and he just fell on the wrong side of things, where it's like the last 2 weeks we've seen Amari Cooper struggle, now we've seen Mike Evans struggle, and it's like, okay, Marshawn Lattimore is still a good NFL cornerback, which we should have really known. This was a matchup for them to exploit with Chris Godwin. That's why when I said at the beginning of the show, certain things, like, I just like seeing things that fall the way that they're supposed to. And they really should have been attacking the slot with Chris Godwin today. And I'm glad that they did. You know, he finishes the game with 125 yards and 2 touchdowns. Am I worried about Evans? Yes, because you should never have a wide receiver one who finishes the game with nothing, like with zero. Like, that's just, that should not ever happen. So knowing that Godwin's emergence has brought Evans' floor down this low. It's the reason that I was actually selling Mike Evans after his 3-touchdown game. I was telling people to go out there and trade away Mike Evans, that I would have traded him away for Odell Beckham Jr. And I still obviously still stand by that, even though I don't know what Beckham's performance is going to be tomorrow night. But yes, I can't say I'm too surprised, but his floor is lower than we thought.
And to be clear, just because I think some people still kind of are reticent to do this, like me, you have Chris Godwin higher rest of season than Mike Evans, correct?
I do.
Okay, good. Let's move on to a game that we can probably just fly through really quickly, which is Eagles 31, Jets 6. I mean, the Eagles had this game won pretty much entirely from the word go. Zach Ertz does find the end zone. Carson Wentz throws for just 189 yards in the score. They didn't really need to do much, but out of curiosity, Jordan Howard here again, you know, has the bigger game, 13 carries, 62 yards with the score. Miles Sanders has 9 carries, gains just 15 yards. He does catch 4 passes for 49 yards. I mean, are you slowly moving Jordan Howard up or what?
Yeah, I have. And I actually had Jordan Howard ranked over Miles Sanders this week. So I was probably one of the few people to do that. I know a lot of people are expecting a Miles Sanders breakout at some point, but the snaps were trending towards Howard and away from Sanders, although in today's game it was practically even. It's hard to take away things from a game like this though, because the game was a blowout, but it does help to know that Miles Sanders, 5 targets, that's massive, you know, for his production in the future. They don't want to become a very predictable offense, you know, and there's going to be much more competitive games where they're going to have to throw the ball, and to know that Miles Sanders is trusted and that Darren Sproles is kind of falling down the ladder, like he's almost like a non-factor at this point, It bodes well for both these running backs. So Jordan Howard, I have him ranked as a top 40 running back rest of season, but I still, if you could find someone to buy him right now, I would still be selling, just because I do believe that Miles Sanders eventually is the leader of this timeshare, and that Jordan Howard is kind of like a touchdown or bust option.
Okay, and on the other side of the ball, I don't really think there's much you can take away from an offense that's run by Luke Falk. All signs point to Sam Darnold hopefully being back next week against Dallas, and that's a tough matchup, obviously, but let's just do it like this. Le'Veon Bell gains 88 total yards. Jamison Crowder, 2 catches for 10 yards. Robbie Anderson, 1 catch for 16 yards. Now, you're still starting Bell regardless of the QB. Is that fair?
Yes, I actually think Le'Veon Bell is like a guy that I would buy low on. I was not drafting Le'Veon Bell anywhere. But if you run into people now that like legitimately are just frustrated with the Jets offense, I think it's time to buy. They are getting Chris Herndon back. They are going to get Sam Darnold back here shortly. To know that Le'Veon Bell has been able to perform, you know, like score 15 plus PPR points in 2 of 3 games with, you know, a third string quarterback is pretty good. The biggest takeaway for me in this game is that Adam Gase is still a terrible head coach. And this goes back to the idea that Sam Darnold was never going to play in this game, yet you continued to give him first team reps throughout practice instead of giving them to Luke Falk like you should have done, the guy that was going to be the starter. So instead, let's throw Luke Falk out there, have him take 10 sacks behind that terrible offensive line, have him throw 2 interceptions. It's a joke, man. I'm ashamed and I'm sorry to those who have listened. And I was willing to play Robbie Anderson this week. I had him in DFS lineups. It was terrible. And this goes back to, I'm sorry, but it's Adam Gase. I continue to say it, and I don't need to say it anymore, but it's just terrible.
Yes, Sam Darnold got all of the first-team reps this week, all. So that just shows you all you need to know very quickly, Tags. Are you still owning Robbie Anderson?
I don't know when you can start him confidently.
I mean, for me, he's a guy who, just to be... I do own Robbie Anderson in a couple of leagues. I'm still stashing him. I think when Sam Darnold comes back, he is going to be useful. And when I have room, I am, and I expect him to be a, you know, when he's there, probably, you know, when Darnold's there, once he gets comfortable, you know, a guy you can start most weeks in or out. Sounds like perhaps you disagree.
No,
you don't have to debate it, man.
I don't. It's just, it's frustrating is all. Darnold is going to bring some value back, and they do have a good schedule coming up. So
yeah,
I'll hold him, I guess.
All right. I'll take it, Tags. I'll take it. Raiders 24. Bears 21. Let's start with the Raiders here very quickly. No Tyrell Williams in this game, so it's pretty much all on the ground. Foster Moreau was the leading receiver with 46 yards. Josh Jacobs, a big game here, 26 for 123 on the ground with 2 touchdowns. He also sees 4 targets, 3 catches for 20 yards. He's becoming a little more involved here in the passing game. What's your outlook on him going forward?
Part of me, and the Bears defense didn't show up. That's my biggest takeaway from this game. But the Josh Jacobs getting more touches, that's not a bad thing. It's never a bad thing. The Bears defense last year, all year long, allowed 4 rushing touchdowns to running backs. This week, they allowed 3 of them. Whatever the case is with London, whatever they did, you know, showing up on Thursday, I don't know. There's a lot of variables that can go into that stuff, but their defense just did not show up to play today. And Josh Jacobs took advantage, so you got to give him credit for that. I thought there was no way that the Raiders would win that game. And this is the most realist Bears fan that you could talk to and saying that, like, you know, I it's almost like the Dolphins lost last year when the Bears lost to the Dolphins last year when Brock Osweiler was starting and nobody gave them a chance. It feels like that game all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. This was really disappointing to watch. I mean, the Raiders had it right from the get-go that the Bears tried to come back. What about the Bears on offense here? David Montgomery, really disappointing. 11 for 25 on the ground. He does find the end zone. Allen Robinson, a huge day. 7 catches, 97 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Obviously, Chase Daniel was a quarterback. They get a bye after that. Sounds like Trubisky should be back. Anything here on the offensive side of the board for the Bears?
I mean, David Montgomery better get used to seeing these loaded boxes, because it's basically saying, Chase Daniel, Mitch Trubisky, we're going to make you guys beat us. They're leaving wide receivers in man coverage all over the field and basically saying they're going to make the quarterback beat them. And, you know, Allen Robinson's just really good. he is really good. And I know that some people have wanted to sell Allen Robinson because, like, he's a guy that's attached to, you know, a mediocre to under a below average quarterback, no matter who it is under center. But he's got it done. I mean, like, he's getting 7+ targets in every game. He's catching most of them. In this game, he was the only reason that the Bears were in the game, because he's making catches. This does not look like an offense that was ranked, I think it was 10th in the NFL last year in scoring per game. It doesn't even look close to that. So you hope that Trubisky can come back and bring the magic that he had last year. But from what we've seen so far this year, I don't know. This is not a team that I feel like you need to sell every piece off of, because I think it can only go up from here. But at the same time, I don't think it's one that you have to necessarily target, you know, in trades or anything like that.
All right, let's move on here to Vikings 28, Giants 10. Adam Thielen with the most predictable squeaky wheel game of all time. 7 for 130 and 2 touchdowns as Kirk Cousins opened things up a little bit through the air with 306 yards passing. Dalvin Cook does what he does, 21 for 132 on the ground. He does lose a fumble. But how about Stefon Diggs here? He has a lot of drama coming into this game. He sees 4 targets, 3 catches, 44 yards. If you're a Stefon Diggs owner at this point, how are you evaluating your situation? I mean, is he gonna be on the team rest of season?
I would assume. I mean,
where does he fall? Is he a wide receiver 3 at this point for you?
Yeah, he's a high-end wide receiver 3. You know, going over, like, the reason that I liked Cousins this week, and the reason I told people that I felt like he was a low-end QB1 with a high floor in this game, is that if you look over the beginning of their schedule, it's like, did we really expect him to have a good start? Like going over the games, like the matchups that he had, the pressure that he faced, the blowouts that the wins they had over the Raiders and the Falcons in week 1, like, he didn't throw the ball very much. So it's like, you know, the production, it should have been expected to be somewhat down for Cousins. So it's good to see him bounce back and look better in a game against a team that, you know, really doesn't bring much pressure. But looking ahead at their schedule, they have one of the better schedules, like, moving forward. So I'm down to hold Adam Thielen. I think Kirk Cousins can be a streamer, I think, 3 of the next 4 games. Stefon Diggs is going to get his. Like, he's going to be fine. If they don't trade him, he's going to be fine. And if they do trade him, he's going to go to a contender that needs a wide receiver and that will target him a ton. So right now, I treat him as a high-end wide receiver 3. You just kind of have to go with the ups and downs.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's around where I have him. I think about, I don't know, in the high 20s somewhere. You're still starting him every week. It's not always going to be good, but, you know, all this drama, it's a little disconcerting, but overall, there's not much you can do but keep rolling him out there. On the other side of the ball, we talked already about the biggest thing, which was Sterling Shepard. Wayne Gallman misses most of this game with a concussion. John Hilleman gets most of the work, but it sounds like Saquon Barkley may be back next week, which is crazy. Darius Slayton does catch the touchdown pass here, leads the way with 62 yards receiving. Anything else that you want to talk about from the Giants side of the ball?
Not really. They play the Patriots this week, so throw them all away. seriously, Wayne Gallman's droppable, though. He's not going to play on Thursday. They play on Thursday night, so it's a short turnaround, so he's not going to get cleared of that concussion. Saquon might be coming back. At the very worst, it sounds like he'll be back in week 7. So Gallman is just a bad handcuff right now.
Yep, 100%. I would go ahead and move on from then. Broncos 20, Chargers 13. A little bit surprising here, but the Broncos sort of quote-unquote save their season. Joe Flacco plays conservative, 182 yards and a touchdown. He does throw a pick. Cortland Sutton, again, another touchdown, 4 catches, 92 yards. And a score, but Phillip Lindsay is really kind of the big guy in this game. 15 carries, 114 yards, and a touchdown, plus he adds 4 catches for 33 yards. I mean, Royce Freeman runs well and does see 13 carries, so it's basically a split there, 61 yards. But the bigger game from Lindsay, anything here from the Broncos side of the ball?
Cortland Sutton, I told people, like, it's weird to see Emmanuel Sanders 1 target. That's just, I don't know what's going on there. I'll be curious to go and check and see if there was anything wrong, if it was just part of the game plan, whatever the case may be. I would imagine that he saw Casey Hayward much of the game. But I mean, Cortland Sutton came into this game and he had, I think it was just one less reception, and he may have had more yards and just less touchdowns than Emmanuel Sanders, but he was right there. Like, Emmanuel Sanders was someone that was being undervalued by a lot of people, and I ranked him as a top 30 wide receiver this week, and that's not something that he's like someone that I was not drafting anywhere. Like, I didn't want him anywhere, and I've kind of come around to the fact that Joe Flacco likes him. It's a very top-heavy offense in terms of where the targets go. So Sutton did have a good matchup, especially if Casey Hayward was going to shadow Emmanuel Sanders. So, I mean, seven targets when nobody else saw more than four. Like, he's clearly a favorite of Joe Flacco. He's a big man that could score touchdowns in the red zone. There's not much not to like. I mean, he continues to move up my board. I haven't moved him in the top 36 as like an every week play, but I now have him as a top 40 wide receiver.
Yeah, and I mean, look, to be as you know, transparent as possible, he did have 92 yards, 70 of them came from that catch and run touchdown, right? So, I mean, it is something where it's not as if, you know, you can't take that away because that happened. But certainly that's something that you at least need to factor in. But I agree, he is somebody who Joe Flacco likes. He's talented. You know, we liked him sort of last year as we saw what he could do. So he is somebody certainly that you should can start pretty much every week, at least if you're in a pinch. On the other side of the ball, it was pretty ugly. Philip Rivers throws 48 times and throws for 211 yards, two picks. They really can't get anything going. Mike Williams sees 13 targets, six catches for 74 yards. Austin Eckler sees 16 targets, has 15 catches for 86 yards. Now, I know some of that was at the end when they were catching up, but on the ground, you know, Melvin Gordon 12 for 31 and Austin Eckler just 3 for 7. Eckler does lose a fumble at the very end of the half where he tried to, you know, stretch for the goal line and the ball came out and stuff like that. How do you feel anything here on the Charger side of the ball?
Bad day at the office for Philip Rivers.
Oh, terrible.
He was just off all game. It was like seriously, this was a brutal one to watch. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I was playing my son a little bit with his monster truck that he just got because I was kind of like bored of that game. Like, it was just a very boring game to watch. Rivers looked terrible. Like, he just missed defenders left and right. And I thought that Mike Williams was injured on the one play. He obviously came back and saw 13 targets. He was in like, Rivers was intercepted twice, and I want to say that he was targeting Williams both times, and there was like another time where he should have been picked off. So Rivers just had, it was just a bad game. I don't want to overwrite it, but throwing to your running back 16 times, come on, Phil, you're better than that.
It was just bad. It was a bad game.
It's a very Derek Carr-esque game.
Right, and not all that unpredictable. This is a game where you felt like the Chargers were just going to completely lay an egg, right? They come off the big win against Miami. They come home against a struggling Broncos team. You just know that this is what they do. But yeah, bad game, and things should obviously be brighter, especially for Keenan Allen, who was pretty quiet in this game. Last game, Packers 34, Cowboys 24. I mean, it's all Aaron Jones in this game from the Packers side. 19 carries, 107 yards, 4 touchdowns, plus 8 targets, 7 catches, 75 yards through the air. Nobody else really does anything without Devontae Adams here. I mean, what do you want to say about Aaron Jones?
When we knew Jamal Williams was going to be out for this game, it was like, okay, you're playing him as an RB1. This kind of goes back to the idea that Eddie Lacy was a top 6 running back with Aaron Rodgers multiple times. It wasn't like a one-time thing. It was multiple times, and Eddie Lacy wasn't very good. Aaron Jones is actually really good at football, and he was someone that I wrote quite a bit about on the primer this past week, and that so his struggles the last two games, people were talking about his yards per carry and how he was less efficient because he was being asked to do a workhorse role, and no, that had nothing to do with it. He actually gained, so he was actually averaging like negative 0.2 yards per carry in term before contact. So basically his offensive line was not doing him at all. Like, they were literally giving him nothing, and he had to do everything after contact. This game, he got a little bit more of a running start. They created some holes for him. He looked fantastic. This is what happens when you get a workhorse, you know, with 20 plus touches alongside Aaron Rodgers. He's going to perform. Like, does Aaron Jones already have like 8 touchdowns in the season?
Yeah, I believe so. I think he had 4. He was one of, you know, he was in the top 5 of running backs in the league, I think. So I believe he had 4 coming in. So now he has 8. Yeah, just a monstrous game. And, you know, without Devontae Adams, just the fact that he was able to step up like that, it's just, it's good to see, because we've always known, you know, how good he can be. So it's good to see him having really that great season. On the other side of the ball, I mean, look, they were playing from behind. They were way behind, but still against a great pass defense here. Dak Prescott, 463 yards, 2 touchdowns. He does throw 3 picks. Amari Cooper, as you heard live when Tags was watching in awe of him, 14 targets, 11 catches, 226 yards, and a touchdown. Michael Gallup returns 13 targets, 7 catches for 113 yards and a touchdown. Ezekiel Elliott, 12 for 62 on the ground and a touchdown. What here from the Cowboys side?
Dak Prescott had another bad game. I mean, I know he threw for 463 yards. It kind of reminds me of Jared Goff against Tampa Bay, where it was a bad game all around. Like, Dak Prescott just missed so many throws, and he honestly cost them this game. I think Kellen Moore just, like, overthought this one. They came out throwing the ball, and Dak turned over the ball right away, and it's like, run the ball. Like, Ezekiel Elliott should have run all over the Green Bay Packers. That was the only thing that, like, the only way that the Packers win this game is if you turn the ball over and you don't stick to your run-heavy approach. Basically, and the Cowboys did everything. Like, Ezekiel Elliott getting 12 carries against the Packers is stupid. Like, I don't care what the game script was. I don't care. Like, the reason that he had that few carries is because you started out with a pass-happy game plan. Like, you're getting too cute with it. Yes, you have Amari Cooper, who can just dominate anybody. Yes, you have Michael Gallup back in the lineup, but use those guys to your advantage. They're not, it just means that Ezekiel Elliott is not going to be the only focal point of the offense, that they have to slow down. Ugh, so frustrating, man. Like,
you attack the Packers on the ground, dude. It's not rocket science. They have an elite pass defense. Their run defense is leaky. You use Ezekiel Elliott regardless of where you are in the game, and you just sort of take control of it. I did not understand this when I saw it when it first started, but look, they can bounce back next week, of course, against the Jets. They don't have a great schedule going forward. It's not one of the best schedules, certainly, at least passing wise. So, but for next week at least, I think all should be right. But certainly I agree with you completely. I didn't understand the game plan, and it's just one of those games that you know, unfortunate to see there from the Cowboys. But that is going to do it for today's show. Thanks to our sponsor, Pristine Auction, where they have a ton of great items up for bid every single day. Just go to PRISTINE auction.com. enjoy the rest of your week 5 football, everyone. Tags and Bobby will be back to take you through the waiver wire. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a pool full of your love. But I don't even know how the chemistry works when your pool's at kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble. I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again,
with new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.